It's just after 12 noon, and it is now time for Live and Local, your connection to local music and more. We have a feature on the Urbana Pops Orchestra, which has its first concert, first of two planned for this summer, as well as a summer youth theater production. And that concert's going to be this Saturday at noon at Lincoln Square in Urbana, called Urbana Pops at the Movies. We spoke with their conductor, Daniel Sutherland, a couple weeks ago, something like that. And we have with us Daniel again, but also are you the assistant conductor, Stephen? Co-conductor? What is your
conductor.
Associate conductor is the title. And then we also have with us arranger and composer involved on this concert, Kyle Dutarnowski. Is that how you say it? Says that's about it. And he brought along a clarinet to play some things for us, as well as some of his own music. So that's the main feature on our show today. Hope you'll stick around for Live and Local. So here you got sort of the evolution of Star Trek from the original TV series theme to the end titles for the motion picture, the first Star Trek motion picture. And the first motion picture. That's how it's billed here, with the City of Prague Philharmonic, conducted by Nick Rain, on Live and Local on FM 90.9. And it's Urbana Pops at the Movies this Saturday at 12 noon at Lincoln Square Village in Urbana. It's a concert that has some co-conductors, all of whom are with us. Daniel Sutherland is the official conductor, the main conductor of the orchestra, which is having its inaugural concert. And
Stephen Larson.
Stephen Larson, right. Because there's another Stephen Larson in town, as you know, who also conducts the Champaign-Urbana Symphony. And Stephen Larson, the associate conductor. And Kyle Dutarnowski is a composer and arranger whose arrangements is on that concert, or compositions.
Composition, yes.
And what is that composition?
It's a short piece I wrote that basically goes through the progressions that one feels when you lose a loved one. Starts rather sad and progresses to the fondness that you feel when you remember all the happy times that were had, and then progresses again back to, well, not back to sadness, but to acceptance.
And is this film music?
No, this was purely written for the Pops. It's just a concert piece that I wrote.
And what's your connection to these guys that got you involved in the concert?
I met Daniel a couple of years ago, right?
Yeah, that's okay.
And I met him, and we became fast friends through our mutual admiration for film music. And that's how I met Steven and everyone else. And so when Daniel started the Urbana Pops, he called me up and asked me if I wanted to come out and conduct and write a piece and perform. And I said, of course. So here I am.
And to come out from, where are you?
From Los Angeles.
You're in Los Angeles now.
In Los Angeles, yes.
And what are you doing in Los Angeles?
Attempting to be a composer for film. That's what I'm trying to do, like so many people work in the film industry. So
I just read a horrible book about this. It's kind of about the film industry, or not really. Bret Easton Ellis, Imperial Bedrooms. No?
It doesn't ring a bell.
I thought it was so bad. It's the only book I ever remember throwing in the trash as soon as
finished
it.
All right. You didn't even recycle it.
No, I didn't even. I just thought it wasn't worth giving to somebody else. It was a follow-up to his earlier book, Less Than Zero, which I thought was pretty bad too, but this was just even worse. But in any event, it happens to be based in Hollywood, and people are killed and tortured and things like that, but I hope you don't get involved in that aspect.
I'm still clear of all of that.
Yeah, so... where did you meet Daniel? I mean, Daniel, you're at Millikan or just finished at Millikan University?
Well, still studying at Millikan.
That needs some explanation. So you're still a student?
Yeah, I'm still a student.
Still
a
student. Uh-huh. So you haven't, are you going to be a senior next year?
It's kind of a fifth year.
Fifth year, yes. I did one of those in college, yeah. And Stephen, are you connected to Daniel through Millikan?
Through Millikan, yes.
Yeah. And a student there or were
I'm
a student?
I'm not a student. I have a bachelor's from Millikan. And I used to teach in Decatur, but and now I'm in. I was teaching at Urbana Middle School, but you know, they cut a whole bunch of people from middle school. So
oh, and you're one of those.
I'm still looking for another teaching position. Yep.
Wow, what were you teaching?
I was totally out of my field as a TA with the special ed program.
And well, I'm sorry that you were one of the relatively few cuts. I heard that they managed to spread them around, and not like. Cut entire departments or anything like that, which I thought was good, but unfortunately not so hot for you. Well, good luck on the job search. Well, and are you your field is music?
Is music, and I really enjoy teaching choir, but it was good to come and do some stuff with instrumentalists again.
Kyle, so anyway, back to the, did you meet through Millikan or through some other connection?
No,
we have mutual friends that went
we
to
do.
Millikan.
Yeah, my roommate, has a friend of hers who went to Millikan, Danny Rowland.
Yeah.
With Daniel. So there's a
little
bit
of how we were introduced.
A train of connection there.
And how long have you been fighting the fight in Los Angeles?
Only a couple years ago. I moved out to L.A. in 2007 after I graduated from college, and I went to USC for their film scoring program there and spent that first year doing that program and finished that in 2008. And so I've been in the real world since then.
I saw that USC is in the big doghouse with the NCAA.
Yes, it is. Yeah, it sucks.
Yeah, I'm sure it is if you're a USC-er. What are they, the Trojans?
Trojans, yes. Yeah.
And so how's success so far? Are you having any?
I am. It's tricky, but I'm very much enjoying what I'm doing, and I love it.
Talk a little bit about... the process of doing what you're doing or trying to do what you're doing.
It's tricky. One of the great benefits that I had when I first moved to LA is that I went to USC because the film scoring program there is really fantastic. And the connections that you get from that program, we work with a lot of working, very professional people, you know, composers and arrangers, orchestrators, musicians, performers, singers, I mean, the whole gamut, and we did a lot of recording projects at Warner Brothers and Capitol Records, and, you know, so that kind of experience and exposure really helps. So when the time comes, when you graduate to, you know, get a job and get work, you know, you have a good foundation from where to begin looking.
So you've written some things so far?
Yeah, I've written a couple of things, a lot of short film work. The very first gig I did... my very first, not gig, but the very first call I got was for a recording session for, John Debney, who's a composer out in LA, and he was working on some music for The Mummy, the third Mummy film, and I got a call from his orchestrator and said, hey, can you do some, a little bit of prep work, for me, and you can come to the session, hang out at Fox, and I did, and that was amazing.
So what does prep work mean?
Prep work, for him, this was just he wanted to get a list of all the cues that John had written and how many minutes they were, how many pages they were for billing and that sort of thing, because it was all through, you know, through the union. And that sort of work was great. And then this particular fellow, Brad Dechter, has been calling me off and on since then, and it's been wonderful. And then I've been doing other work for other folks. I've been doing some... orchestration for him, and then proofreading for other people, and orchestration for other people, and composing, and arranging, conducting, I mean, performing clarinet, you know, whatever.
And some of the studio orchestras?
All the yep. Yeah.
So you're getting a little the taste of everything so far.
A little bit, yeah. It's wonderful.
And you brought along some of your scores. Are these scores that have... gotten play so far, or somebody's recorded them.
They've all been recorded. These scores were for a couple of these are for projects that I did with USC, and then a few others were for a couple other films. that I did.
And you remember the sequence of how you have them on the CD here?
I remember what the, I don't remember what the middle couple are. I remember what the first one
is. Let's start with the first one.
First one. The first one is a cue called Taking Flight. This was actually the final project that we did at USC. We had a huge, I think it was about 70-piece orchestra at Warner Brothers. Fantastic group of players. And it was, I think, 18 or so of us students. We each had about 15 minutes with the players, so they sight read
15 or 5-0.
Yeah,
1-5,
yeah. It was very, very quick. But these, you know, these guys are all pros, and we had a fantastic engineer, Dennis Sands. I believe he was actually on that project, yeah. And so this was, the project, the assignment was to pick a film, any film that's already been made or a student film or, you know, anything. Pick about a 2-minute clip of it that you want to rescore. And have a go at it. So that's what I did. This film is from the third Harry Potter film, Harry Potter and the Prisoner of Azkaban, and it's the first instance that we see Harry and Buckbeak flying around the school grounds.
Okay, I can picture that very well as a fan.
Oh, good.
Okay, it's music by Kyle DeTarnowski here on Live and Local on FM 90.9. That is a cue from a film, sort of. sort of difficult to describe here, by Kyle DeTarnowski for the Harry Potter and the Prisoner of Azkaban, and is described Harry Potter riding the hippogriff Buckbeak, at least for the first time. Is that the one you guys were just describing, where he's flying over the lake and so on? So how did, I mean, the idea of a cue is not something that in non-film composition is even a term you use.
Right, right.
It's just a film term.
It's purely in film and television, a cue. If you want to think of it in terms of you know, kind of traditional symphonic concert works, concert music, a cue, you could think of it as a very short movement of a symphony. So if you want to think of the entire score, in a film, you know, an hour or so of music, more or less, depending, as the whole symphony, a cue, each cue could be, you could have a 15-second cue, you can have a 2-minute cue. You usually don't have music more than 2 minutes at a time. You know, in some instances, you may have a huge 15-minute cue, but it's, or not 15-minute cue, but 15-minute piece that's broken down into, you know, various cues for recording ease, but...
The moviegoer might hear it as one long musical
segment. And the
soundtrack
will be edited as one piece, as one instance, but it'll be broken down for the recording in different cues. So this was, right, one cue that I wrote for that film.
And did you have, either as part of the assignment or in your own mind when you were writing it, the style of the music that was already written for the film or not?
I tried not to. It's
probably hard.
It's very tricky. It's tricky. You know, because of course I'd seen the movie and part of the reason I chose that film and that particular scene was because I didn't have a large, romantic, lush piece of music for my demo reel for gigs. So I wanted to get something big and dramatic in that way. So that was part of the reason I chose that. You try to not let the previous music influence you when you're writing something like this. And the same thing when you're working on a regular film. You know, oftentimes director or producer and editor sometimes too will put in a temp track, temporary music, either to edit to or to just get an idea, a feel of what they want from the composer. So oftentimes, you know, when you're working on a film, you go in and spot it. And you sit down with the director and talk where you're going to have music, what it's going to do, where you're not going to have music, which is just as important. So oftentimes when you have a spotting session, you'll have that temporary music in there. So that's the same kind of a thing there, where you try to not let that influence you, at least not not in a detrimental way, not in a stifling way.
Was The Prisoner of Azkaban, was that still a John Williams score?
Yes, that was the last Harry Potter score that he did. There are rumors that he may come back for the second installment of The Last Picture.
Or not.
I don't know if he will. I think that would be fantastic. But realistically, I don't think it'll happen.
I thought I heard just a fragment of... Now I'm having a blanking. Batman films, the early ones.
Elfman? Danny Elfman?
Danny Elfman. I thought I heard a fragment of Elfman in there.
It's pretty dark, kind of in that vein. The film itself is much darker, particularly than the two predecessors, the original two Harry Potter films. So that would not particularly surprise me. It is kind of Tim Burton-esque in that way. So I think musically that makes sense.
Yeah. When you you said that you've done some orchestrating mm-hmm. for some composers, mm-hmm. It was relatively recently that I learned, sort of definitely to my surprise and somewhat to my chagrin, that chagrin isn't the right word either, that Leonard Bernstein didn't orchestrate all of his own music. You know, you'd think here's a great composer and somebody else orchestrated most of West Side Story, for example. And I wonder how common it is for a film composer to write down what? A piano score, say here's the melody and basically what I want to do, and then here, Kyle, you finish it.
I don't know of that happening with any professional composers and certainly none of my younger colleagues. You do have certainly varying levels of orchestration because you have varying levels of talent with the composers themselves. You have, you know, for example, well, you know, start at the top, John Williams still writes all by hand and he uses about 8 or 10 stave sketch paper. So he's able to be quite specific in what he wants with his orchestration. He'll be very, again, specific with the instruments that he wants. And his orchestrator will take that and expand it to a full score and then hand that off to the copyists. So there's not a lot of work going on for his orchestrator, and I don't mean that disrespectfully to Conrad Pope because he's an incredibly talented man. But he will also very freely admit that, so I don't feel badly in saying that. And you have other composers who are not as trained in the craft of writing for an orchestra. So there, are, you know, you have some orchestrators that are have a bit more freedom in that way. Some of them do more, a little bit more arranging than actually orchestrating. Or they, you know, do both arranging and orchestrating. So it all depends. But most, you know, pretty much every composer has some idea of what they want in the instruments and whatever. And they'll also make adjustments at the scoring session too. So,
Danny Elfman was actually one that I have wondered about because I heard a while ago that he doesn't even really read music. Which seems kind of incredible.
Don't know if he does or doesn't read music.
I mean, I've read this from his own mouth. You know, an article where he said, I don't. And I wonder, how can you do that and write film scores that sound like anything, but certainly sound like they sound?
Danny Elfman is a whistler.
Actually, there we go. I'm turning up my
I heard that Danny Elfman is a whistler, and he whistles what he wants, and then he has his team of copyists sit down, and they write it up.
Now, that sounds something made up. Did you read that out of his own mouth, too?
I do know that there are a couple of composers who hum into tape recorders.
Really?
And play into tape recorders, and they hand it off to their people who write it out, and then they mock it up for the director, et cetera.
Wow.
So, Danny Elfman is quite a talented guitarist, though. Yeah. So he's a musician.
Right.
Danny
Elfman, I know he was pretty self-taught with film. When Tim Burton first approached him in 85 to do Pee-wee, Elfman said to Steve Bartek, his orchestrator, do you know anything about this? And I think, according to some article I read, Bartek said, yeah, I took an orchestration class in college, and Elfman said, great, let's go. So that was, they kind of figured it out as he went.
So Hollywood isn't necessarily as glamorous it looks, at least at the beginning.
At the beginning, right. But I do know that Elfman, Elfman plays all of his stuff into the piano, and I have been fortunate enough to hear one of his mock-ups for, I think it was Meet the Robinsons, and it's all there in the mock-up. So his orchestrator will just add a couple things and kind of flesh it out. Whoops.
So now that's another term. I mean, I know what a mock-up is when you're talking about visual design, but what is it?
It's the same kind of idea. Basically, majority, good 95 probably so percent of directors and producers and other filmmakers prefer to hear some sort of synthesized version of the score. So the composer will either themselves or hire someone to go into the computer and make a synthesized version of what they've written, and then play that back along with the picture. So a director will come over for a meeting, and they'll play it back, and they can say, okay, I like that, I don't like this, I don't like that, and some directors are very specific, others aren't so much, so it all depends. But that way they're much more, they can be much more involved in that way from the get-go. And so then when you get to the recording session, there aren't any surprises from their point of view.
I'm talking with Kyle Dutarnowski, who is a film composer, arranger, orchestrator, conductor, and is a guest at the first concert by the Urbana Pops Orchestra tomorrow at noon at Lincoln Square in Urbana. And one of his compositions will be on the program. And lots of other film music. It's called Urbana Pops at the Movies. And you're listening to Live and Local here on FM 90.9. You brought along some other excerpts here.
Right.
You think you might know what's next on your...
I believe the next one was also for a USC project. Same kind of idea with the first one. We were given a session. I think this one was also at Warner Brothers. A string orchestra and harp session. And the assignment was to pick, again, a two-minute clip of film or so.
From another existing film? And you think this is?
And I believe this is a bit of music I wrote for the movie Pleasantville, which originally had a Randy Newman score. And this is for, if this is the key that I'm thinking of, it's called A New Day, and it's underscores the scene where, for those of you who have seen the movie, where everything first turns into Technicolor.
Is this one of the Jim Carrey films?
No.
No, I'm mixing it up.
This is Tobey Maguire, Reese Witherspoon, where they're in black and white, they get sucked into the television, and they're in an old 1950s-esque TV show. And as a result of their influences and exposing the townspeople to life and love and all of that sort of thing, things gradually turn... into color.
Music from Pleasantville, as it were, by Kyle Dutarnowski on Live and Local. music by Kyle Dutarnowski. For a cue from the film, Pleasantville. And you said it's funny that it's really, I think it's very funny that you said that the original score was by Randy Newman, because mm-hmm. that was the next composer I was going to ask you about. As somebody who, I wonder how much of the composition does he do, of the creation of the score does he do?
I actually don't know. That's a very good question. I've never met Randy Newman, and I haven't heard anything either way, actually, from anybody really. So
So you can't dish up the dirt there on that one.
Can't dish on Randy Newman, no.
Because you just ever see him, you see him play piano and sing, and I think he's just a god awful singer personally, and I don't understand why anybody wants to hear him. But some of the film scores of his I've heard are really delightful.
Yeah.
Of course, I can't think of any offhand because I don't remember these things. But you recall some of the other scores that he's
aside
films
from Pleasantville,
that he scored?
The Natural was one. What else? He's done another number of Pixar films: A Bug's Life, Toy Story. A recent example is The Princess and the Frog, Disney picture that he wrote the score and songs for.
He's been nominated for Academy Awards mm-hmm. a few times.
He was nominated for Pleasantville. I don't believe he's won for score. He may have won for a song for something. I'm not sure.
That's some pretty creative stuff.
But yeah. Well, and the thing with that whole family really, but Randy Newman, he's part of this kind of dynasty, the Newman dynasty, that started with Alfred Newman, who was the head of music at 20th Century Fox for about 20 years.
Really? That's what relation is
Randy,
he? Do we need to open up Wikipedia here?
Randy, I think he is the nephew of Alfred Newman, I believe.
This is the point where we make the disclaimer that all the views and opinions expressed here may have no basis in fact.
There are, I believe he's the nephew. I could be mistaken, though.
So who else is in that family, though?
Well, Lionel Newman was the head of 20th Century Fox after Alfred Newman was no longer there. And he was there for a long time, and then he passed away. And then so there's Randy Newman, who is also, a composer, of course. And his, I believe, Thomas Newman is his cousin.
And Thomas Newman is?
Thomas Newman is also a composer known for, quasi-minimalistic kind of scores. He's done a lot of work for Sam Mendes. American Beauty is kind of the first thing a lot of people think of when they think of Thomas Newman, a lot of marimba work and very textural writing. I remember when that first movie came out, that was all that anyone ever wanted. That was like, give me American Beauty, give me American Beauty, that style of writing. And it's still pretty popular.
The more minimalist, meaning that not a whole lot of music and not big orchestrations or anything.
Typically very kind of concentrated ideas. You'll have, a melodic or rhythmic idea that you repeat a lot of times, and you'll add other things for color and whatnot. But that was, that's sort of his style for a lot of things. Recent one Thomas Newman did was Wall-E, same kind of idea, and paid forward, a bunch of things. So that whole family is insanely, insanely talented. And just kind of anecdotally, Alfred Newman, as the head of 20th Century Fox, he was in charge of all the music. The head of music at 20th Century Fox, he was in charge of all the music, and pretty much any picture that they did, he got to have his go at if he wanted to, and if he didn't want it, he would pass it on. There was one film I remember hearing that Bernard Herrmann, who was probably most famous for his work with Alfred Hitchcock doing Psycho and a number of other films. One story I heard where Bernard Herrmann was offered a picture that Alfred Newman turned down, and apparently Bernard Herrmann said, well, if Alfred Newman's not doing it, why the hell am I going to do it? So there you go. And actually Alfred Newman, many people I'm sure will not know his name because he's hasn't been alive in many years, but everyone has heard his music because that opening 20th Century Fox fanfare.
That's it.
And that's the only fanfare that lives to this day that was written back when all the studios first opened up.
So all the other fanfares are newer ones.
Yeah. Either new arrangements or have been rewritten.
Well, no, we have some recordings of Alfred Newman conducting the Hollywood Bowl Symphony or orchestra, whatever it's called.
Yeah, orchestra.
In fact, maybe I'll run out and get one just for the fun of it while we're listening to the next cue in just a moment. I'll give you a second to search your memory bank, see if you can come up with what track number three might be. I should probably give you a cue right now. Let's see
that,
if you
that
can,
would help. Yeah,
you get to name your own tune, name your own composition in two notes or less. Here we go. Oh, that's not going to work because I have the cue off. Well, we'll do it this way then. We'll let the listeners participate in this in this experiment and see how well Kyle knows his own stuff. Well, that's not going to work either. I've never tried to do this, so maybe because you can't actually play music back when you're. Although that should have worked. Well, I'll worry about it in a minute. After I tell you that support for today's show on WILL comes in part from World Harvest International and Gourmet Foods on the corner of 6th and University in Champaign, providing Champaign-Urbana with an international selection of chocolates, cheeses, oils, balsamic vinegar, jams, spices, barbecue sauces, and more. World Harvest invites you to join them in supporting public radio. This is Live and Local. I'm Kevin Kelly. And enjoying talking here with Kyle Dutarnowski, who is the composer making his way in Hollywood, working on it, and out here to do a little conducting and have one of his pieces played by the Urbana Pops Orchestra, giving its inaugural concert this Saturday at 12 noon. Music from Star Wars, Batman, Harry Potter, and more. It's called Urbana Pops at the Movies. And Daniel Sutherland with Stephen Larson all conducting on that concert, and they're all actually sitting here right now, although Kyle doing most of the talking right now because he's the one with all the Hollywood stories.
Oh, jeez.
And then you guys are doing a second concert is planned on the 10th of July.
Yep.
Going from film to Broadway.
Yep, that's it.
Anything other than that general theme to say at the moment? Do you know what the program is going to be?
Specifically, that's part of that concert is our preview for the Urbana Youth Summer Theater musical, which is Once Upon a Mattress. So we have a close relationship with that program. So we'll have some of our pieces, and then the kids will be there, and they're going to sing some songs from Once Upon a Mattress, which will be also accompanying at the end of July, the musical.
And those who may not have heard when we talked with Daniel a few weeks ago about the whole Pops Orchestra, which is a brand new venture, where are you getting your musicians? It's a mix of
all over. It's we seem to find musicians in such the odd spots, or we'll have musicians that just kind of come up out of nowhere, and they say, "Well, I've heard about this Pops Orchestra. Can I play violin or whatever?" And if they say, "Can I play violin?" we're like, "Please play violin." our brass and wind section, our brass section is primarily doctoral candidates and masters. I'm studying, with a master's in performance at the U of I. All of our wind players kind of have similar experience. Some of them are from Millikan University, some buddies of mine. The string section, really, our concert master, Tamara Gingold, kind of did a lot of searching for us with our string section. And we have a lot of students in our string section. That's what's so great about the Urbana Pops, really, is that it's an educational adventure as much as it is a performing kind of thing. We kind of strive for this optimum blend of professional musicians and then, give some students in the area a chance to sit in a really seasoned orchestra and sit in sections with these really, monster players. And we could tell from the first rehearsal we had, some of these kids that were in this rehearsal, they heard our brass section play for the first time, and you'd see on their face, they just lit up, and they're like, "Oh man, that sounded great." And so
not quite what they're used to.
No, not at all, I think. And it's and a lot of the players we have, they're playing for charity. We're a little under budget right now, Which, by the way, we are accepting donations, listeners, if you'd like.
Oh, really?
To. Yes.
What a surprise.
Yeah. And it's, you know, come to the concert tomorrow and support the Urbana Pops. We'd really love to pay all of our musicians, including our students, because they're, you know, they're really special students and they're really, really great, and they do a great job. And, you know, it's kind of hard times right now. The economy's a little suffering, and it's hard to have a really great ensemble like this, but you know, with just the right support, we can make sure that it you know, keeps going. And I know that people who go and watch the concert tomorrow, they'll be blown away by the quality of musicianship that we have, and they'll want to support it. So, you know, I urge everyone to go out and see the concert. I think the music is really great. You know, Kyle's piece is breathtaking. it's just, to say the least, is breathtaking. And Kyle also is going to solo with us on his clarinet. And we're doing a lot of really famous film scores that, you know, everyone knows. And most of what we're doing aren't, you know, those typical watered down arrangements that you know, go and buy from J.W. Pepper or something. They're the real deal. And they're extremely difficult, but that's, you know, it's not really a problem for the orchestra at all because we have so many great players. So it'll really be a great show.
So you got some of the original John Williams scores?
Yes, we do.
That means you didn't pay a small penny for those.
Well, we have blanket licensing through the Park District, who's helping us do some of our stuff, and it's all of our licensing is taken care of. You know, we're licensed through BMI and ASCAP and things like that, and which allows us a lot of freedom with getting licenses for music, because it, like you said, it's not cheap at all.
Mm-mm.
And especially something like John Williams, you know, that's expensive.
Those
stuff.
Those expensive rentals, yeah.
And what's really great about that actually is that they have this whole deluxe edition of John Williams scores that you can buy, and to get the score in parts for, you know, for Star Wars, it's something like $600 just for the score in parts.
Yeah.
And that's just for, like, you know, the main title. It's really, yeah. But it's worth
3 minutes
it.
Of music.
Yeah, but, you know, it's 3 minutes well worth $600. It's just fantastic music.
If you have the $600.
Of course, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Well, you can find more information and make a contribution at Urbana. Well, just plug in Urbana Pops Orchestra and Google that. It's a little longer email address than that, or a web address than that.
It's just urbanapops.org, I think.
Okay. Yep. Well, it shows up here as milligroups.com or something like that.
Oh.
Yeah. Well, there you're surprised
we have,
by that.
Yeah. I know we have like redirects set up or something. I don't know. I know nothing about that really. So.
Well, I think I figured out how to do this name that tune question. I think I didn't have one of the buttons. I had an extra button push. Let's see what happens. So Kyle DeTarnowski is going to name his own tune in some small number of notes here. Let's see.
Got it.
You know what it is?
Yep.
Okay.
I do.
Good job.
thank you. Thanks.
That was impressive.
This was a similar sort of project. This was for USC again. And the interesting thing about this particular project, it was this same kind of idea where we're given a clip of film and we have to score it. A film that was already made. The interesting thing about this project was that the gentleman who taught the class, Brad Dechter, who I mentioned earlier, tried to make it as close to the real world as we could get in the class with such small numbers. And the great thing was that we were given a clip of film, and each person would rotate and fulfill different roles in the scoring process. So you would have one person compose, write the music. You would have the second person write the music on the computer using purely MIDI work, because that's how everyone except John Williams works in Hollywood. So write the music in the computer, hand the MIDI file off to the person who was the music preparation person. So they would take the MIDI file notes and rework that into legible music, hand that off to the orchestrator, who will then make any orchestration adjustments, and then that would go back to the music prep person, who would then make all the parts from the score that the orchestrator would provide. Anyway, that was a long little side story, but there you go.
So what was your role
this
in
film,
this one?
I was composing for this one. This film was, I believe it was Runaway Jury, if I'm remembering that correctly. And this was a chase sequence, aptly titled The Chase. Very clever title. The nice thing about this project was that the idea was that the session was going to be what's often referred to as a sweetening session.
And what sweetening?
Sweetening, yes, sweetening. Meaning you'll have a number of live players come in and record over synth music that's been prepared. So the live players will either replace it, in the case of solo instruments. This session we had a couple of, two violins and maybe another string or so. A harp player, and a hornist, and a fantastic woodwind guy by the name of Dan Higgins, on that session. And so for the solo work was all replaced, but for example, the strings would be layered on top of the synth stuff to make it sound a bit more alive and real. So that was...
So that's what the sound is that
that's
we're going
to hear. So that's what you're going to hear.
Combination of live and synthesized.
You're going to hear the mix of that, yes.
Music by Kyle Dutarnowski on Live and Local. Some nice stuff. Sounds like film music.
I hope so.
Well, I mean, that it's funny that we were just talking, you know, while we're listening to this about the concepts of film music, and I was saying that I'm rather partial to those scores that you've called earlier minimal, you mm-hmm. know, where there's not as much, they're not as heavy, the sound, there's less sound, there might be a single mm-hmm. voice, and you know, European films, a lot of European films, you'll go for long stretches where there isn't any music at all. Mm-hmm. And it just pops in. And then when all of a sudden you notice it because it's really doing something pointed, whereas sure. a lot of the times in American films, you don't even know there's music going on because mm-hmm. it never stops.
Right.
And if you took it away and just watched them do whatever it is they're doing, nothing would be happening.
Right. One of the things I mentioned earlier about the spotting session, where I said where you don't have music is just as important, is very, very true for this reason. There are some directors who I think they're a bit nervous about music because they don't know much about it. And I think a lot of a lot of schools are that have film schools and film departments are, I think, trying to work on that, which is a wonderful thing, trying to expose the film students, you know, to really look at the music, expose them to the music, and really kind of get a handle for what it's what it can do in a positive way. So, but you know, when you have directors who are nervous, I think they about the music and its power. I think they sometimes can sort of freak out a bit, and you know, they're afraid to not have music, or they are afraid to have music. Or, you know, you kind of have to walk this line.
They're maybe a little more at the mercy of the composer than.
Well, yes and no. I mean, that goes
into go both ways.
Something else, right? But yeah, I mean, but the directors that really kind of know what they're doing, and just in general, but also specifically with the music, not so much know. They don't have to have musical training, but know. Well, respect the composer enough, and put it that way, to, you know, trust them with their instincts, not only just specifically with, you know, the instruments that are written for, but also just, you know, with the spotting, like I said, where to have music and where you don't have it. And, you know, the absence of music, less is more, you know, can be just as powerful.
Yeah, really effective. Well, American Beauty, I think, was one you mentioned.
With Tom Stamen. Yeah, certainly.
Yeah. Our time is actually moving rather quickly, okay. And I had forgotten until Daniel mentioned earlier that you actually brought your clarinet along.
I did, yes.
To play a little something from tomorrow's concert.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And is this something that you're actually playing as a solo?
Yes, I will be performing as a soloist for music from The Terminal, which was written by John Williams for a Steven Spielberg film a couple years ago.
So we have to imagine the orchestra.
Yeah, imagine.
So now that we've had these cues, Danny Elfman.
Yeah.
Now that we have had these cues, you can fill in the blanks for the orchestral sound. This will be very minimal.
Yeah.
From Mikhail Tarnowski here on the Live and Local. And I should say that we do not have our usual sound engineer here. Mike Pritchard is on vacation today, so you were left with my just turned the speaking mic down and picked up a little more of the air that comes out of the mouthpiece that people don't usually hear from a clarinet unless you're right on top of it.
There you go.
And there you go. Kyle is going to be playing with the Urbana Pops tomorrow at noon. And one of his pieces is on the program, and you're conducting that piece?
Yes, I am.
I assume. Mm-hmm. And Daniel Sutherland is conducting some or most of the concert?
It's the rest of the concert.
The rest of the concert. Yeah. And then, Stephen Larson, what are you doing tomorrow?
Well, to save
cheerleading?
To save a little bit of money, we decided not to pay a keyboard player, so I'm playing piano on almost all the tunes.
And Stephen will be making his conducting appearances on our next concert.
On the next concert, yeah. Which will be... So this one is called Urbana Pops at the Movies, and on Saturday, July the 10th, it's Urbana Pops Plays Broadway. And you're listening to Live and Local. Our show today is made possible in part by Krannert Center for the Performing Arts, presenting a free traffic jam featuring the No Secret Band at 5 p.m. on Friday, June 18th in the lobby. More information can be found at krannertcenter.com. And I'm going to take a few minutes here and run down some of the many other performances you can go see and hear in the next couple of days. I don't have my Sunday calendar before me, but I think everything that's happening on Sunday is a repeat of things that are happening today and tomorrow. So... the Big Creek Guitar Band is at Kickapoo Landing at Kickapoo State Park in Oakwood tonight at 5:30. It's part two of Bach's St. Matthew Passion as part of the Peoria Bach Festival at Trinity Lutheran Church in Peoria. That's tonight at 8 o'clock. Picasso at the Le Pan Agile. Steve Martin play is at the Station Theater in Urbana tonight and tomorrow at 8 o'clock, and I think on Sunday as well. Your Bag or Mine is a comedy at Conklin's Barn 2 Dinner Theater in Goodfield. Performance and dinner starts at 6 tonight and tomorrow, and there's a Sunday matinee. Showboat is at the Little Theater on the Square in Sullivan tonight and tomorrow at 8 o'clock, and I think there's a Sunday matinee. David Howie is singing at Bentley's in downtown Champaign tonight at 9 o'clock. The Heartland Festival Orchestra is playing with violinist Lara St. John tomorrow at 7:30 at Five Points Washington Caterpillar Performing Arts Center in Washington, Illinois, tomorrow night 7:30. And then at a winery whose name I don't have in front of me because I didn't bring my Sunday calendar on Sunday afternoon at 2 o'clock, also in Peoria. The Kevin Lucas Orchestra, among many other performers, is at the Taste of Champagne at Westside Park in Champaign. That starts today, I guess. The taste does. The Decatur Young Park Singers are at Milliken Homestead in Decatur Saturday at 6 o'clock. It's the GLT Summer Concert with Andrew Junior Boy Jones, who's a blues guitarist, a singer and songwriter. And he's actually the opening act, and I failed to write down who the actual headliners on are. But you can go to the WGLT website and look for their summer concert information. He starts at 5 o'clock at the corner of Jefferson and Center Street in Bloomington. And those are the calendar items that I've got. Please send me yours at this email address, willcalendar@illinois.edu. That's willcalendar@illinois.edu. And I'll be back with another show on Monday from 12 to 1 here on Live and Local. I want to say thanks to Daniel Sutherland, music director of the Urbana Pops Orchestra, Stephen Larson, who is associate conductor of the orchestra, and Kyle Dutarnowski, who is a guest composer, conductor, and clarinetist on tomorrow's concert at noon. And we've enjoyed hearing some of your own film composition here.
Thank you.
And we'll have to start looking out for your name. I'm going to give you my email address and be sure to send us information and we can know what films to go look out, look for.
Sounds good.
Listen to your music.
I'll gladly send that along.
I'll bet you will. And good luck as you pursue your career in Los Angeles.
Thank you very much.
It's Live and Local on FM 90.9. Thanks for joining us. Here's a quick look at the weather. Partly sunny this afternoon, a chance of showers and thunderstorms, the high 86. Tonight, mostly cloudy with a chance of showers and thunderstorms, the low 72. Tomorrow, partly sunny with a chance of showers and thunderstorms, the high 90. And Sunday, partly sunny with a chance of showers and thunderstorms. That's the theme for the weekend, a high of 85. We're still at 88 degrees. It is now 1 o'clock. And we have the Writer's Almanac coming up in just a minute and classical music for you at 106. Support for our show comes in part from the Corkscrew Wine Emporium, 203 North Vine, Urbana, with wines, beers, and spirits. For the serious collector to the first-time buyer, wine tastings are held every Saturday from 2 to 6. Information is available at 337-7704 or at thecorkscrew.com. This is WYL-FM and HD Urbana. Operating translators, W293-AF Danville and W266-AF Urbana, were the listener-supported broadcasting service of the College of Media at Illinois. And here is one more cue from Kyle Dutarnowski.